Another gift that God has given us is that of hearing. Last night we spoke to you about sight. I would hate to think that I couldn't listen to the sound of voices, to the singing of birds, to the flow of water down a mountain brook. Hearing is a wonderful gift. But there are animals that are given this gift to a much greater extent than you and I have. If you take the cortex of a dog, a very large area of its cortex is devoted to the sense of hearing. In fact, if you look at, map out the cortex of a dog, and you mark in one color the sense of hearing, the area that deals with the sense of hearing, and then another area that deals with the sense of smell, there isn't much cortex left. Because the dog lives in a world of sounds and smells. But God made man differently. We have a rather restricted area of our cortex that deals with hearing, and perhaps a still smaller area that deals with smell. But we have a large area of the forebrain, the frontal lobes, that deal with personality. And this is where we develop the kind of people we are. And animals don't have that capacity. God didn't make them that way. So He gave them abilities that we don't have. A rabbit can hear sounds that you and I wouldn't. So does a dog. And some animals smell things that I'm glad we don't have to smell. Now, the ear is, again, a remarkable organ. And I'm going to try to depict a few of the things here on the board. And maybe coming back and forth, because some of the figures that I want to give you I don't have in my mind. But the ear is divided into three parts. We call it the outer ear, the middle ear, and the inner ear. Now the outer ear is not just this structure alone. It includes the ear canal, which goes in at a bent angle for about an inch. So when you look into the ear canal, it isn't straight. It has a twist in it, and it's directed downwards and forwards. This little ear canal plays an important role, and so I think does the what we call the ear. This is anatomically the pinna. And all of its configurations have not really been figured out, just why they have these bumps and curves and valleys. But when I was a young man, I had just graduated from Newbold, and I was asked to be the youth director of a camp, youth camp, that was held in southern England, in Hastings. Maybe some of you have been to Hastings, England. And along the coast is a fort that was built centuries ago, maybe in the 11th century. And I had the opportunity of visiting that fort while we were there. We took a group to go see it. And when you go down into one of the dungeons, I don't know how many hundreds of years ago it was done, but the ruler in that area and the director of that fort had sculptors come and carve in the sandstone on which the fort is built the outside, this pinna, the human ear. The cavern or room in which it was housed at one end was probably as long as this room here and maybe twice as high. It was almost square, a rectangle as far as the breadth and the height. And as you looked, there was the human ear, beautifully carved, out of sandstone, all the details. And it had also a little passageway, which was the outer canal. And then the guide took us around through a tunnel to the other end of the canal. And there was a small room. And this whole chamber was designed to interrogate prisoners. They would put them in this room. Of course, it was dark. They couldn't see that carved human ear there. And then they would put a stooge in among the prisoners who would get them to talk. He pretended to be one of the prisoners, and he would talk and get out what these people had actually done. And as we in a group were back in that little room far there, they had some people stand at this end of the room. There was the ear, and the canal ended further on. And everything they said, even if they whispered, you could hear it clearly in that room. The sound waves were picked up and apparently directed by this ear down the canal. Now, I've seen people do this. Have you ever seen them do this? Why do they do that? It picks up more of the sounds and directs it down the canal. Now, the canal is 1 inch long, approximately, and in it, in the walls of the canal, there are special glands that produce what we call earwax. It's a true wax. A wax is a highly saturated fat. If you take any fat, corn oil, safflower oil, and then you keep putting hydrogen atoms in and you keep super saturating, it will turn into a wax. And the earwax has a couple of functions. One is that it moistens or covers about 2,000 hairs that also grow in the outer canal. And these hairs are directed outwards. And the wax is sticky. So any insect that wants to crawl in has a hard time. It's impeded by the hairs and the wax. You know, it's been told, and I'm sure you've been told this, I was told this when I was a medical student, that the only thing that you should ever put into your outer ear is your elbow. And you try that. See, people stick things down this outer canal, it impinges on the eardrum. But we'll talk about that just in a few moments. The ear is so designed, both in its shape and in its direction, this outer canal, it holds a column of air. And under normal circumstances, that column of air varies very slightly in temperature. The outside air may be quite cold, but that column of air retains almost constant temperature. Now, if you go into a very strong wind, a cold wind, you may get an earache. Have any of you had that? And that occurs when this column of air is disturbed and the temperature drops. And many people will suffer from an earache. Now, at the inner end of this outer canal is a eardrum, the tympanic membrane. Now, I used to think that the canal went in straight and here was the eardrum and then the middle ear, but it isn't that way. The canal bends on itself, and the eardrum, instead of being at right angles to the canal, is at a very oblique angle that looks downwards and outwards. And as the air waves come in, so picked up by our outer ear, directed down the ear canal, they strike this eardrum or membrane, and it moves back and forth. It moves about one angstrom. An angstrom is about a billionth of a centimeter. That isn't very much. Now, on the inner side of the eardrum, a bone is attached to the drum itself. It's called the malleus, sometimes given the name of hammer, because it has a rounded knob on the end. And this bone, of course, is the first structure as we come from the outside inward of the middle ear. The tympanic membrane or eardrum separates the outer ear from the middle ear. Now, the middle ear is a rather large cavity, relatively. It isn't very deep. And it's crossed from the eardrum to an opening in the inner ear by three jointed bones. These are the ossicles: the malleus, the incus, and the stapes, or the hammer, the anvil, and the stirrup. Now, the inner ear is within a bone, and it's also rather tiny. And there are two openings. One is closed by the foot of the stirrup, and the other, just an eighth of an inch away, is just covered with a membrane. But before we go to the inner ear, let's finish up the middle ear. The middle ear connects to the back of your nose. That's called the inner ear canal, or the Eustachian tube. And when you go up in an airplane, or you go up in a driving up to a mountain, your ears pop. What it does, it allows air to come through your mouth and nose on the inner side of the eardrum. So it equalizes the pressure in your ear canal that is outside with the air pressure. So it's even. Now, if that canal is blocked and you go up higher altitude where the air pressure is less, then the drum tends to bulge outwards. Or if you have been at a higher altitude and equilibrated, and then you come down to a lower altitude where the pressure is high here and it is not equalized on the inside in the middle ear, then you get a very severe earache. And they tell you to open your mouth and yawn and chew and go through various maneuvers to get the Eustachian tube open so that the air can come in and equalize it on either side of the membrane. These three bones that are jointed one to the other transfer the movement of the eardrum to the movement of the foot of the stapes, or the stirrup. Now, the foot of the stapes is at one end of a double spiral canal that is large at the base and gets very small. And it's a double spiral. In other words, while it's going up, it's also coming down. It's something like a snail shell. And if you took about 2 to 3 drops of a thin fluid, like water, it's called perilymph, it'll fill all the chamber in this double spiral. So it's rather small, 2.5 drops, small drops. If you take honey on a cold day, a drop is a big thing, you know. But this is a small drop. Drops are not the same size, depending on the viscosity of the fluid you're dealing with. Now, you have to change the movements of air waves, which are large and are easily produced, to the movement of water waves, and produce water waves in this little spiral chamber. And I have some figures here, and some of you may want to put them down. I'm going over to the board. I will try to speak loud enough so that you can hear. I think this microphone is on. If you take the vibratory area of the eardrum it's equal to 55 square millimeters. And then if you take the area of the foot plate, of the stapes or stirrup, this is the sort of oblong, not quite circular, the points are rounded, where the stapes pushes against the fluid in the inner ear and sets up waves. It's quite small, it's 3.2 square millimeters. And if you figure out the ratio now, the hydraulic ratio, because you're going from air to fluid, you divide one into the other, and you have 17.2 is the hydraulic ratio. You can put hydraulic above there. Now, there is a certain lever ratio. See, when you move two bones on a joint, you form a lever. And depending where the muscles are attached, you can either decrease or increase the strength of movement or the force of movement. And the lever ratio between the malleus, which is the one that's attached to the eardrum, via the incus to the stapes, the three bones, I'm only putting two down here, is 1.3:1. It's slightly increased. If it was 1:1, it would be exactly the same, but it is slightly increased. And as a result, the transfer ratio in other words, the force of the eardrum moving back and forth transferred to the force of the foot of the stapes moving back and forth is 22.4:1. Now, engineers have worked it out, and this is precisely to the fourth decimal place the requirement of changing the force of air waves to fluid waves. It is precisely that. Engineers have worked out the force required to change air waves, the movement of air, to fluid waves or water waves. And it's 22.4 and another three decimals. I didn't put all the decimals. That's precisely what we have from the transfer of the movement of the eardrum to setting up the fluid waves in the inner ear. Now let's tell you another rather interesting thing. During World War I, Winston Churchill was the inventor of the tank. I don't know if any of you have looked in an encyclopedia to see the evolution of a tank. But there was trench warfare in Europe during World War II, and the two enemy forces living in trenches that got filled up with water as it rained and snow and ice. It was a terrible situation. And then, of course, when they would jump out of the trenches and go for the enemy, they faced machine gun, rifle fire, and hundreds of thousands, millions of both sides were killed. Well, Churchill came up with the idea, you know, these, I see them, I don't know what you call them, in a kitchen. They are these rounded pots, you know. Sometimes you can get them cast iron, various things. He decided that if they made a big iron shield that was shaped that way, and they had men underneath that shield, some of them carrying it, so it would just skim across the surface of the earth, or the ground, and others had holes there that would fire to the enemy, they would be protected as they approached the enemy lines. And that was the first tank. Well, then they found that it was pretty hard for these men to carry this heavy iron load very far, and so they put it on tracks, first on wheels, and the wheels got all bogged down in the dirt, and then they put it on tracks, and that was how we today have these sophisticated tanks. That's how they started. But by the end of World War II, they had tanks. They didn't have to carry them. The men sat in them. They had cannons on top and on the sides. They had holes for machine guns and rifles to fire at the enemy. But they found that when the cannon was fired, the explosion in an iron chamber in which these folks were blew the eardrums out. And so they told the physiologists in England to figure out some way to protect these people. And in the studies they did, they discovered that if a person anticipates a noise, there are two muscles within the middle ear. They have tunnels in the bone, and they're just their tendons stick out and attached to the stapes and the malleus. And if you anticipate a sound, these muscles contract, and they tighten the eardrum on the outside, and they pull the stapes, the foot of the stapes, away from the inner ear. And when the explosion goes, the ear is not damaged. And so the English tanks were the first ones to develop a noise. There would be a rather large noise would be made, and everyone in the tank knew that the cannon was going to fire, and the ears got ready and protected themselves that way. Now, of course, we can put earmuffs and other things on, but you can just imagine being in a small steel container and having an enormous cannon sound go off. So between the two, they put covers on the ear, and then they anticipated the sound. It took care of the problem. As I said, the inner ear is a double spiral that fills with 2 to 3 drops of perilymph. And the double chamber is produced by a membrane. It's a single spiral, but there's a membrane that goes down that spiral and divides it into two. And the fluid goes wave, starting at the stapes, goes up and then comes down the spiral and ends in another opening into the middle ear that's covered by a membrane. So that when the stapes goes in, the membrane comes out. And these fluid waves are made when we're listening, as you're listening to me, at about 100 or a little more per second. 100 waves per or little more per second while you're listening to someone speaking like I am. Now, within part of this double spiral, there's another spiral chamber that has a flap on it, and a flap of tissue, and underneath this tissue are cells that have little hairs. And as the wave movement goes up and down, this flap strikes these hairs on the cells underlying them, underlying the flap. The flap is a spiral flap. It goes, and it's larger at the bottom and smaller at the top. And as the wave goes up, the flap strikes these cells. Now, if we had a grand piano here, it has what, about 240 keys, and maybe goes through 7.5 octaves. The little piano in your inner ear has 100,000 keys and can go 3 octaves below and 5 octaves above. It has an enormous range. If you took a grand piano, a standard grand piano, and shrunk it to 1/1,000,000th its size, it would be the size of your little grand piano in your inner ear. Or if you took your inner ear and enlarged it 1,000,000 times, it would be the size of a grand piano. And yet it has a much greater range than the best grand piano that can be made. Now, the Bible is filled with statements about the ear and also about the function of the ear. What is the ear there for? Or why have we been given ears? To hear. And when the Lord gave his parables, you remember how he ended several of them? He that hath ears to hear, let him hear. Now, I'll speak of it a little more in a moment, but I want to mention it now so that your neurons begin to synapse a little. Is there any difference between hearing and listening? And what is the difference? Well, I have a few ideas here that I'd like to share with you. And let me just find it here. You know, I read last night, and we'll emphasize it here, that the hearing ear and the seeing eye and the hearing ear, the Lord had made even both of these. And there are not many things in the Bible where it comes out so specifically to tell us what the Creator has done. I have some figures here that you might like to write down again, so that if you want to give a talk someday, you can do it and don't have to dig out all the information over the years. When you hear the wind blowing, not a strong gale, but just a gentle wind, but that you can hear, and the fluttering of the leaves, that is 10 times the minimum sound that the ear can detect. That's 10 times the sound, the minimum the ear can detect. When you whisper to someone 4 feet away, that is 100 times the minimum that your ear can hear. When you're carrying on a conversation in a front room, a small room, you're just talking casually to someone, that is 1,000 times. The minimum that you can hear, the volume. When you are carrying on a conversation quite loud, like I am now, at 12 or more feet distance from the person, that is 100,000 times the volume of the minimum that you can hear. And when you hear a peal of thunder, that is 1,000,000 times the minimum that your ear can detect. And when you get sounds of any kind that begin to hurt your ear, that is 10 million times the amount of the volume, the minimum that you can hear. So here is this little organ, just a minute little thing, that has a fantastic range. When you go to buy a speaker in some store, you buy a VCR, you want to listen to and look at videotapes or something like that, and you get a speaker, none of them come close to the range that our ears have. And we can listen to a whole spectrum of sounds at the same time. Have you ever thought of what goes on when you listen to an orchestra and hear the violins and the cellos and the basses and the trumpets and flutes and all of these instruments, and then somebody is singing or a choir is singing, and these little ears are detecting all those different sounds simultaneously. And then someone can be talking to you at the same time while you're listening to that. Another interesting thing, in radios and in sound systems, one of the things that the engineers have had to work out is to prevent echoing or reverberation. Now, sometimes you'll hear a program or something and they put in an echo deliberately. But most of the time, they are attempting to block out reverberation. And they do it through rather complicated electronic techniques to dampen it. God prevented reverberation in our ears by means of these three bones. It's a simple mechanical device that blocks reverberation. If you dissect the inner ear, you find these minute muscles that pull on two of these bones. And these two muscles that I mentioned earlier that protect against sounds when you anticipate a loud sound also prevent reverberation. And I've taught anatomy, and we never require the students to dissect the inner ear. It takes too long, the middle ear. But we tell them if they want to do it on their own time, they're welcome to, and they're welcome to keep the little bones if they can bring them out intact. Well, most people bring out the malleus and the incus intact. But most of them, they're a little impatient. And when they try to take the stapedius, its foot comes off. It remains fastened to the membrane that holds it to the bony inner ear. But one of the students, it wasn't one of the last classes I taught, but a few classes back while I was still teaching anatomy, he got out all three bones, beautiful, intact. And he had them in the palm of his hand. And by the way, when an infant is born, these three bones are almost adult size. They don't grow with the infant. It's something unique. They grow very, very slightly. They are almost adult size. Well, here he had these three bones. He had shown them to me, and another group of students came and wanted to see them, and he put his palm out there, and a student opposite him sneezed, and the bones vanished. And I said, "Don't move. Don't move. Let's look with our eyes, but not with our feet." And 20 minutes later, we had found two of them. We never found one. We don't know what happened. They're that small. They disappeared with a little sneeze. So after that, I'd warn the students, don't open your hand in case a friend of yours sneezes on it. Some years ago at the Walter Reed Army Hospital, in their research unit at Bethesda, Maryland, they discovered that in the hearing area of our brain, there are certain neurons that can get aroused. They are all active when they are hearing a sound or a voice. But when an individual begins to concentrate on the sound or the voice or what is being said, certain of those cells get more active. And they are called these attention units. Now, my wife has the ability to concentrate. She's a bright woman. She was a good student in all through her school years. And I remember one day I went in and wanted to tell her something. And she was doing something at the desk, and I spoke to her. And I said, "Margaret, you didn't hear me." She said, "Yes, I heard you, but I'm not listening." You see, her mind was on something else. She heard me, but she wasn't listening to what I was saying. And I think it's a very important thing for us to realize that there's a difference between hearing and listening. Listening is when you tune into something. You put your attention on it. Your attention units in your cortex are activated. And I think the Bible doesn't use those terms of attention units that I have used. But if you read the scriptures, you'll find over and over again that the Lord is asking, appealing to his people to turn on the attention units. He says, "You hear and you do not perceive because your mind is darkened." They're hearing, but they're not listening. Their attention is somewhere else. They're not concentrating on the counsel the Lord is giving them. Christ gave the parable, you remember, of the sower. And it's one of the most beautiful parables in the New Testament. And he said that there was a certain man, sower, went out to sow, and he sowed seed. And some fell on stony ground, hard ground, and the birds of the air came and took them away. And some fell on the weeds, grew up and choked them. And finally, some fell on good ground and brought forth seed. And when the disciples asked him what it was, what this parable meant, they didn't catch the significance of it, and probably I wouldn't have either. He said, "You know, the seed that fell on the stony ground are they that hear but do not perceive." See, they're not listening. And the devil takes away the seed. And they're left barren. And then he goes on to say that those that put down root, but the weeds grow around them and choke them. It's the sounds of life, of worldly things, that drowns out the sound of God's voice. When you go to your room, read that parable through, and it makes very great sense. You know, we live in a world of noise. We talk about air pollution. There's noise pollution. You know, when I was a kid growing up in India, there were no radios, no televisions. Oh, they had the phonograph, those trumpet-like things that came out. We didn't have one. We couldn't afford one. Now, when the first radios came, I think some of you are older, remember how the massive things that would stand in one end of the room, you have to have a big room to put a radio in it. You know, you go out, and I get so disgusted. You backpack up into the mountains, and you camp by a beautiful lake, and the fellow next to you brings out his Walkman or something bigger than that and blasts it all over the countryside. I think it should be forbidden by federal law. But we live in a world of noise, and you know, some of the so-called music of today is actually injures the ear. It's just not what is said, but the way it is put, said, and both are bad. I would like to, I think my time has just about run out, and I'd like to read a verse here in the 50th chapter of Isaiah. And I'm going to read it again tonight when I talk about the tongue, because it talks about both the tongue and the ear. But I want you to concentrate more on the ear this morning. The Lord God hath given me the tongue of the learned, that I should know how to speak a word in season to him that is weary. He awakeneth me. He awakeneth morning by morning. He awakeneth mine ear to hear as the learned. And the next verse, and the Lord God opened mine ear, and I was not rebellious, neither turned away back. You know, do you have an ear of the learned? Do you listen to the voice of God? You remember that beautiful statement, you will hear the voice behind you saying what? This is the way. Walk ye in it. But you know, if our ears are drowned out by the sounds of the world, we'll never hear that still small voice. God has given us ears that can detect minute sounds. He has designed our ears that we can hear the voice of the Holy Spirit saying, this is the way, walk ye in it. But the devil also knows that, and he has done everything he can in this world to drown out the voice of God. People will, they cannot get along without listening to something going on almost all their waking hours. And many times they'll turn it on and go to sleep with the sounds going. I think the Lord wants us to stand still and be quiet, so that these ears that He has given us will hear His voice, and we will not be rebellious, but follow His counsel and guidance. May God help us this way.
This has been another classic sermon from the Archive of American Christian Ministries. This recording has been digitally reprocessed from the original audio cassette or reel-to-reel in order to make this CD available. The audio quality was improved as much as possible. International copyright, American Christian Ministries. All rights reserved. To order a copy of this or other presentations, or for a free catalog, please call toll-free 800-233-4450. International calls dial 717-652-7000. You may also order from our secure website at www.americanchristianministries.org. There you will discover the largest selection of authentic Adventist preaching available. You can trust ACM. There is no compromise here. If American Christian Ministries has been a blessing to you, why not take a moment just now and send us a note or an email with your testimony? We'll share it with our speakers and volunteer workers to encourage them. Your prayers and continued financial support are very important to ensure the continuation of this ministry as we help prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ. He's coming soon.